Could you say your name and where you're from?
My name is Wahela Johns, and I'm from the Navajo Reservation, which is located in northern Arizona, in USA.
Maybe you can just talk about a little bit about your community in general.
My community is a fairly remote community that most families live in rural areas, and in particular where I'm from is called Black Mesa. It's a region which about 30 to 40,000 people live in rural places within Black Mesa.
Can you talk about the history of coal mining in Black Mesa and the Peabody West Coal Company and how that's affected your community?
The history? Well, for the past over 30 years, Peabody Coal Company has been operating on our homelands using our groundwater to transport coal in a 300-mile pipeline that distributes coal to a power generating station in Laughlin, Nevada, which electrifies the entire Southwest for their electrical needs in Las Vegas and the Los Angeles areas, and then San Francisco and parts of Arizona.
And how has the mining affected the community?
Well, from my perspective, within our communities, it has not benefited us as communities within that region, because the funding that the royalties from the coal mining operations goes directly to a general fund for our tribe, and that's filtered to different programs for the tribal government's needs, but not really for the people. And so the people that live around the mining operations that have to deal with the environmental devastations, the water withdrawal and depletion of the Navajo aquifer. And there's many disturbances of sacred sites, disturbances of relationship between the Navajo and Hopi traditional people, and also our connection to Mother Earth and our responsibility as Diné people, is what we call ourselves, called Navajo tribe, but we call ourselves Diné, and our responsibility to be caretakers of Mother Earth. And it's really disrupted that connection that we have within our surroundings and our survival. So
I want to talk now about climate change. Could you talk maybe, let's say, generally, how have you seen the difference in your own climate in your community and in your own lifetime?
Within the past 30 years of my life, I remember when we were little, we used to see the winter snow come in November, December, January, all the way to March, April. And today, like, we rarely see snow in the winter time. And when we do see snow, it's a huge thing for us nowadays. And within the past couple, 3 years, in our communities, there's been lack of water rainfall coming through the summer, like the monsoons that come up from the south, that bring rain for our corn. Bring rain for our fields, and majority of us are farmers and are ranchers, and we raise sheep, we raise horses, we raise cows as a way of life, and then also we have a subsistent lifestyle in these regions, and so water is very important to us. When it comes in form of rain or if it comes in form of snow, that there's that natural balance that we've been so accustomed to for thousands of years. And if a season doesn't come, like a few years ago, if that spring season does not come, that snow melting does not penetrate through the earth, then yes, that's going to have an impact on our land, and that's going to have an impact on, the people that plant those seeds, the people that have, or the animals that do drink that water when the snow does melt, or when the rainfall does come and settle within water holes, on the land. So it impacts everything, not just the people, but all the vegetation and all the four-legged animals that, and the two-winged animals that depend on water in these seasons. So yeah, I've definitely have seen a huge change within my lifetime.
Can you talk about the links between the fact that, say, the coal company is partly responsible for climate change, it's part of that, and that your community is seeing the effects of climate change in itself?
I feel like we get a double impact in this whole global warming debate and issues, because fossil fuels is the main contributor to greenhouse gases, and our communities are one being impacted by companies, large multinational companies that are, benefiting from this operation, but they aren't accountable, and that pollution, that life cycle of the coal, when it's explored, when it's extracted, when it's transported, when it's refined, when it's burned, combusted, and then when to the end waste product, that whole cycle, that life cycle of coal, there's many human rights abuses, environmental abuses within the land, and so those are in every stage, I think, of this process. To when you're mining coal or oil or gas, it's the same thing. There's many abuses at each stage, and taking in all those little abuses or huge abuses, and then with this bigger, larger, it all contributes to a larger thing, which globally we're all connected to, this global warming effects that are happening in this world. For me, sometimes I feel like our tribal governments are contradicting, to the natural law that we have as indigenous peoples to our land, and to who we are as our identity. And it's governments, it's these decision makers that need to really understand that, we have to be caretakers of this earth. We only have one earth here, and that we need to be responsible for our actions. And there are alternatives to economy. There are alternatives to energy. There are all these other alternatives that we just haven't, invested in. And I think for our community, that's one thing we're pushing, is that just transition to phase out fossil fuels, dependency as an economic means, and to live with cleaner jobs, with cleaner environment, with a cleaner air for our future generations. And that's why I'm here, representing that position that, yes, my lands do contribute, because of mining does contribute to global climate change, but also as a community member, recognizing that that is the main reason for global climate change or increase of greenhouse gases, that we do have a responsibility to, transition off this industry, this dirty industry.
Now, you're here in Montreal as a delegate of the United Nations Climate Change Conference. Do you see Kyoto doing enough to reduce emissions, to change, to reduce the effects of climate change?
I am not too familiar with the whole Kyoto input, like in the whole declaration and what they have and what they stand by. I definitely think here within this conference, we've been pushing language to be recognized and having a seat in discussions to this whole problem, this issues around climate change, that Indigenous peoples' voice should be heard and should have a space for dialogue and for discussion. And we have many Indigenous peoples all over the world that are suffering at the moment, but also come from communities like my situation that aren't being heard. We want to bring up the phase out of oil, coal, and gas companies that operate within our Indigenous homelands. So yes, we need positions to be made available. We have declarations that we've drafted as an Indigenous Peoples Caucus, and we understand, I think we're at the forefront of this whole curbing of global warming. When our communities say no to coal, when they say no to oil because they are facing the human rights abuses by these companies and the impacts of pollution, when we're saying no because this is the reasons why we are being impacted locally by these industries, we are the forefront of this whole curbing of global warming. When we say no to Peabody Coal Company, no to ConocoPhillips, because you guys are polluting, you guys aren't being accountable for your pollution to nearby communities or the lands that you are operating on. We are the forefront. I think we are the forefront of global curbing global warming, more so than these, you know, discussions and dialogue and, you know, that is happening now. I think I feel bad for the communities that are represented here that have been being heavily impacted, like the Arctic region, and hearing their stories of like their subsistence lifestyle being, you know, being diminished right in front of them, and how are they going to adapt, you know, to these changes if they're predicted in such a manner that, you know, is going to be changing, you know, constantly for their future generations. You know, I really feel for those. The people that are being impacted right now, the small island peoples, the poor people all over the world, in India, that don't have clean water, that don't have, like, these are all issues that, these real issues that are happening, that I think that we need to have more a representation from all these communities that are impacted currently, but also host these industries that, oil, coal, gas industries that are operating within poor communities, within indigenous peoples' communities, and hearing their voice in this debate, because I think it adds a lot more a stronger stance on like what we need to do. We should ask the communities where these companies are operating. So, and it's really not countries, it's companies that are basically the ones in the lead of this whole, they kind of have a power in this whole, you know, argument, because they're the ones that are, there's carbon trading, there's all these mechanisms to help curb global warming, but I don't think they're realistically, they're kind of used just to market air, and for my people, there's that concept of marketing air or trading air, you know, as a commodity, is something we don't understand in my community and like my people. You know, one day I told my grandma, I was like, you know, this is what they do. This is what they talk about. They're trading air. You know, they're putting a price tag to air, like they put a price tag to water, commodifying water. And she couldn't believe it. Like, you know, how can you own air? How can you trade air? It's just a foreign concept to us. And I think that, you know, for a lot of communities, that still, that information just doesn't make sense. And I think there is solutions though that that are available. So it's a large issue to take on. And me being here, I'm learning so much about this international dialogue, but also I'm learning more that coming from the communities I come from, it's doing the work that I do to empower our communities to have that voice and to be at these decision-making processes is very important, and that, you know, I'm more, I think, I don't know, it's just different coming from a small community to this, these kind of meetings, and seeing the realities of how, you know, international governments operate, the United Nations operate, you know. So I think it's a great learning experience for me.
Can you talk about the Black Mesa Water Coalition and the resistance to coal?
The Black Mesa Water Coalition formed in 2001, and it's a group of young Diné and Hopi people from the Four Corners region standing in solidarity to protect our water. First it came, you know, we wanted to protect our water from Peabody Coal Company, which was withdrawing water for over 30 years to crush coal, and then, you know, 50% coal, 50% water, and pumping it through a pipeline. The water was only used to be as a transportation means to transport the coal. Usually coal mining and coal fired power plants receive coal through train or railway. In this case, this is the only one that exists in the U.S. It's received by through a pipeline, and it's transported by water. So 35 to 3,800 acre feet of water, which is, you know, 3.3 million gallons per year, was being used to transport coal. And we came together to address these issues. And why is water being used? And water should not be used, because we live in a high desert region that receives less than 7 inches of rainfall per year. And we're here, we're just sending our water, you know, through this pipeline, and they say it evaporates, but, you know, that's precious water that, you know, we should be intaking as, you know, as communities, and using it to something good, and it's sacred to us. So how come we allow these companies to use this water as a transportation means? Like, it has no, you know, like it's nothing, you know. And so we took a stand on that, and so far, because of our grassroots and our efforts, we have kind of forced resolutions to be in place and established in our tribal government level to not use water anymore for this pipeline. So this month, December 2005, Peabody has got to stop using our water by December 31st, 2005. So that's you know, something that we wanted, and as a community. But it was the only way this happened was because of the community support, community push, the people, the mobilization of communities and people wanted this to happen. But before then, the information wasn't in our communities. The amount of withdrawals that Peabody was taking out, all these data wasn't, you know, available, and all these years. And so now, you know, that we have the information available to our communities, and we're understanding these laws and understanding the U.S. EIS procedures, if they're going to mine water or coal or whatever resources, we kind of understand, you know, their process now. But we also understand, like, how we can strategically protect our groundwater, but also, you know, protect our land and our rights as indigenous peoples, and pushing the language that we have that connection, that beautiful, sacred connection to our water, to our land, to the air, to everything, and trying to maintain that, you know, and that responsibility. So I think that's the spirit that came in and helped guide us through our cultural ways and our language and our songs and our prayers, is what, you know, got us this far to be able to, you know, think of the future and think of, you know, how is it going to be for our children 100 years from now, you know, with all of these, how the world is operating today, which is based off, you know, money, and but also preparing ourselves, you know, for to be stronger as Native folks, and to embrace our relations with all living things, but you know, everyone too, not just our people, but we basically want to, you know, share that responsibility with everyone around the world, because we all have a responsibility as a human race to address these issues.
Is there any other messages that you would like to give?
No, just websites that you can check out. For the Black Mesa Water Coalition, it's www.blackmesawatercoalition, the whole word, .org. So it's blackmesawatercoalition.org. And a good website as well, another coalition I work with, is the Save the Peaks Coalition. It's www.savethepeaks.org, which relates to protection of a sacred mountain, the San Francisco Peaks, in Arizona, which is right now we have a huge legal battle that we're up against with the United States Forest Service to protect our sacred mountain from a ski resort who wants to use reclaimed wastewater to make snow. So you're, you know, in Arizona, and of course, because of drought, there hasn't been enough rainfall or snowfall during the winter for the mountain, and the ski resort is proposing to use a local township's wastewater to create snow for the resort. And this is a sacred mountain to more than 13 tribes in Arizona, and it's a shrine for us, it's a church for us, and so we're battling it out with the Forest Service on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And it's an awesome thing now, because I mean, this could potentially be a good thing if it is in our favor for a lot of indigenous peoples in the United States to file, you know, for protection of sacred sites and regain that respect for our sacred sites, you know, for any kind of development that will desecrate our sacred sites. So I would suggest that you all check that out.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much.
One nation under manipulation, brutalization, domination. One nation under. Pushing the fourth world. Can't begin to count the loss. Free trade, the new gun is raised. And how many lives did it cost? Assimilation.